When Eliezer Eved Avraham is speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this week's Parsha, and he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the lady that says, I'll not only give you to drink, I'll give your camels too. So he says, Hanara Asher Omar Elah Tina Kadech Ve'eshte, the girl that I say to her, bring me your pitcher and let me drink from it. Ve'amra, and then she says to me, Shetei, drink. V'gam gemalecha ashkeh, and I'll feed your camels too. She's the one that I know will be for Yitzchak. However, when we continue ahead and we read the story, Rivka did more than that, or not exactly what Eliezer said. It says, "V'tomer shetei adoni, v'temaher v'torid kada ayada v'tashkeh." She said, "My master, please drink from this water," and she gave him water, and she said nothing about the camels. V'techala hashkoto, when she finished having him drink, then she said, now let me give your camels also to drink. Something that Eliezer hadn't even thought of. Eliezer said that she'll right away say, I'll give you and your camels to drink. Rivka said, let me give you to drink. And when he fully finished, then she said, let me give your camels too. The Or HaChaim says that over here also we see deeply in her the Midah of Chesed and Rivka Imenu. She thought to herself, if I say to him right away, let me give you and your camels to drink, he's going to start thinking to himself of all the work I'm going to need to do to start feeding all the camels, and he's going to feel bad to give me so much work. He'll just drink a little bit. He's not going to want me to have to keep on working for him and bringing him more water to drink. Let me first just tell him I'm giving him to drink, so he'll drink as much as he possibly wants. And then when he's full and he drank as much as he wants, then I'll tell him, I want to feed your camels too. The Shlach continues on the next pasuk. The Shlach says, the pasuk stresses how she then ran when she went to the camels to get them water. She ran with her cod to where the water was. And the Shlach said also over here, she was using a lot of wisdom in her chesed. She thought to herself, if right now Eliezer, he just drank from this pitcher. He didn't finish the water. He left some over on the bottom. What am I going to do with that water? If I spill it on the floor, it's making him feel bad, as if water that he drank from, who's going to want to drink from right now? But if I feed it to the camels, and it's like I'm giving the camels to drink from the same water that Eliezer drank from, that's also not appropriate. So she didn't know what to do. So she acted out a scene, and she ran and made it like she fell and she spilled the bucket. And the water spilled to the floor. She would have to start to refill it from the beginning. That way she wouldn't have to insult him with whatever choice she would make with the water. When it comes to doing acts of chesed, so it's not just, oh, you see in front of you an obvious chesed to do, that guy is carrying something heavy, let me help him carry it. But chesed goes way beyond that. What's the best way I could do this for them in the way that they're going to least feel like I'm doing them a chesed? They're going to gain the most, be the least amount of embarrassed? And to what extent could I recognize another person near me or around me, what their needs are, and fill their needs and make them happy? When you look at the tzaddikim, the Talmid HaChamim, and the way they do chesed, we see their chachma and their care in that also. The pasuk in Tehillim says, Ashrei maskil el dal. Fortunate is he that uses his seichel when giving to somebody less than him. There's a story about the current Vizhnitzer Rebbe, that one time he was at a chasana, and he was running under, he was doing the kiddushin under the chuppah. And right after the chuppah, he turned to the father of the chasan and he said, after the chasana, please, whatever time at night it is, and chasidish weddings finish really, really late into the night, like 3, 4 in the morning after the mitzvah tants. So he said, when the chasana is all over, please call me. There's something very important I need to discuss with you. I don't care what time the chasana is over, call me no matter what. Nobody really knows what that's about. They're all interested. What do you want to talk to the father of the chasen about? The chasen is over. The father gets home. It's 4 in the morning. The Vizhnitzer Rebbe gets a phone call. The shamish wakes up the Vizhnitzer Rebbe and says that the father of chasen's on the phone. He does netzil zadayim. He gets on the phone. He said, the wedding was so beautiful. Well, how do you think it went? What do you think about the number of people that came? You think there was enough food? How do you think the berakas came out? What do you think about the fish? What about the music? The order of the songs? started to go into very, you know, all these little nitty-gritty details that are beneath the Rebbe to discuss these little nuances at the wedding that he's discussing with the father. And he stays on the phone with him for like an hour. When he gets off the phone, the shamash turns to him, what was so important about that, that you pushed that he should call you in that 4 in the morning, if you talk about this with him, till 5 in the morning? So the Rebbe said, you didn't see who walked the chassan down to the chuppah? So he said, no, what do you mean? He said, the father walked the chassan by himself. There was no mother with him. His wife passed away 2 years ago. This is their last child that they're marrying off. He's going home to an empty home. Usually, after you marry off one of your children, you go home and you talk to your spouse about how the wedding went and the guests were happy and how do you think the food came out. He's going to come home. He's not going to have anybody to talk to. He's got to remember his wife. It's going to make him sad. I want to right away keep him busy and talk to him about how the wedding went. That's Ashrei Maskil El Dal. There's one of the old mashkichim in the Chevron Yeshiva in the neighborhood over of Hirsch Palei. Zatzal. So he was once sitting on the back of the bus. Some people were witness to this story. And there was a not religious lady that got on the bus with a big dog. She gets on the bus with her dog, and the driver's getting all angry. He said, you have to pay for that dog. He's taking up space. I don't have to pay for a dog. I'll pay for myself. I don't have to pay for a dog. He's like, no, you have to pay for the dog. And they start getting into a fight, and the voices are getting raised. And Rav Hirsch Palei is there, and he wants to create shalom, wants to create peace. He gets up from the back of the bus, he walks to the front, and he says, can I just ask a question? He says to the lady, how old is your dog? So she said, 4. So she said, the dog is younger than 5 years old. You only have to start paying for somebody when they turn 5. And then everybody on the bus starts to laugh, and the driver's laughing, and she's laughing. And then he just like right away lightened the mood and got rid of the fight, and she moved to the back of the bus. Last year I told a story about Rav Avram Gnachovsky. I was sitting on the bus, and there was a lady that was dressed not sanua that suddenly came and sat down right next to him. It's not appropriate. It's not, you know, for him to sit next to such a lady. He didn't want to embarrass her. He didn't want to make her feel bad. But there's plenty of other seats. He wanted to get up and move somewhere else without her feeling bad. So he said to her, "Slicha, yeshli chus bedin. Sorry, I have chus bedin." So it sounds like some scary disease that he didn't want her to get when he moved away, but. Krispidin in Unklus is translation for the word tzitzis. Tzitzis in Aramaic is krispidin. So he's, I have krispidin, I have tzitzis, but that way she would think that he has some disease and that's why he's moving away. He doesn't want her to catch it. One time he stopped a cab, Rav Gnachovsky. He assumes usually cab drivers are men. They used to always be men. And he stopped and it was a lady cab driver. And he's not going to go into a cab alone with a lady, but he also doesn't want to make her feel bad. So he said, Slicha, are you going to Tzfat? He's like in the middle of Mea Sharm. Like, no, like she thinks he's crazy, but he just got exactly what he wanted. She kept on riding away. He doesn't care that he made a fool of himself as long as she wasn't insulted and she wasn't hurt. The Chazon Ish is the story of the Chazon Ish when he was very, very young. This is the story of Shalom Shadon tells the story over in the name of the Nezer HaKodesh, who was the Rav of Kaidan. Kaidan is a town, a city in Lithuania. I was there actually on a trip many years ago. And the Chazon Ish, when he first got married, he lived in his father-in-law's house with his wife in Kaidan. So he was young and he was very quiet and always learning all the time. And Purish from, you know, separate himself from regular everyday things. And people just thought of him as like some type of loner. Nobody realized he was a Talmud Chacham. But he got close to the Rav of Kaidan, the author of the Nezer HaKodesh. And he even made a chavrusa with him, but he told the Rav, I want to learn with the Rav, but only on the condition that the Rav doesn't tell anybody that we learned together. So nobody knew why he would go to his house every single day, but they had a chavrusa, and the Rav saw very soon into it what a massive Talmud Chacham the Chazon Ish was already at such a young age. But what amazed him even more was one day, after they were learning for a couple of months, the Chazon Ish turned to the Rav of the city and said, Could the Rav and I go together to do Bikur Cholim by the house of a certain guy that worked with metal in the neighborhood? Now, the neighborhood was filled with hundreds of families. And there's always people that are sick. And the Rav said, it's not the minhag of the Rav to go to every single person that's sick because there's hundreds of people here. Why should I choose one over the other? So the Rav, there's two times that he goes to somebody's house in the community. He said he goes right before a chasana to Wish Mazel Tov and some other occasion that he didn't remember, Shon Torun didn't remember what it was. So we don't go to do Bikur Cholim. That's not the minhag. So I don't want to make anybody feel slighted. So Chazmi said, no. In this case, I think it's a point the Rav comes to do Bikur Cholim. So I've said, why? He said, because in that family, the wife is very embarrassed for her husband's job. He's dirty all the time. He's working with metal. He doesn't make so much money. And she's embarrassed from him. And therefore, there's a lack of shalom bias. She makes fun of him. She laughs at him. She doesn't treat him appropriately. That if the Rav of the community comes and does Bikur Cholim by him, she's going to be so amazed and so proud that the Rav came to do Bikur Cholim by her husband. She's going to start telling all of her friends and showing off about it and feeling more proud of her husband. It's going to fix the shalom bias in their house. I think that's one of the things the Rav should do. It's one of the Rav's responsibilities. He was amazed by the Chazon Ish's sensitivity, and he said, sure, yeah, and they went, and sure enough, that's what happened. The wife was beaming and amazed. Wow, the Rav is coming to respect my husband that much. And exactly what the Chazon Ish predicted would happen, she started telling all of her friends, and every neighborhood started talking about it, and it restored shalom bias to this home. Another story about the Chazon Ish, many, many years later, already in Eretz Yisrael, so there were, you know, tens of people lined up for brachos and for advice, and the Chazon Ish had to get somewhere. And after he finished giving everybody brachos, the driver said, okay, we have to go to get to the next place. And the Chazon Ish got in the car. But he told the driver, please drive very, very slowly. Drive very slowly until we turn the corner. Then you could drive fast. He said, well, why do we have to drive slowly? The Chazon Ish is in a rush. You finished giving brachos. He said, no. If you drive fast, it's going to make everybody feel like I just need to get away from them. I just need to get to the next place fast. I don't want to give them that feeling. I want them to make them feel like I was so happy being there. I don't want them to feel like I'm going to rush away. So drive slowly so they don't feel like I'm trying to leave them so fast. That level of sensitivity, that type of thought, Ashrei Maskil El Dal, to think about what the other person would feel and how they would read into your actions and what they would take from it, is something that along with growing in Torah and in learning, one grows also in their sensitivities and the way they use their chokmah and their seichel in giving to others. There's a story I heard of Makiel Cutler, one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Lakewood. So he was once collecting money for the yeshiva, and he went to somebody that worked in a band. He played the guitar or something, and he asked him for a donation to the Lakewood yeshiva. So the guy said, Cutler, are you related to Rav Schneer Cutler? He said, yeah, that was my father. He said, here's a check. I'm signing my name. Write any number you want in it. I'll give the yeshiva whatever you want. He said, why specifically to Rav Schneer Cutler's yeshiva you want to give? He said, I'll tell you, I work in a band. I play music, and you know, you go to a simcha, and I play for like 2-3 hours at a simcha. Everyone's dancing. They're enjoying the music, having so much fun. And the night's over. He said, when I would be at a chasen that your father, the Rosh Yeshiva, would come to, we would come to the chasen for 3-4 minutes. He would come right in. Everybody would focus on him, sing Yom Mali Me Melech. He would dance with the chassan in the middle, excitement all around him, everything. And every single time, without fail, he would always, at some point in the middle of the dancing and during those 3 or 4 minutes that he was there, look up at me, give me a wink and go like that, like give me a sign with his hands that like you're playing really well, great music, good job, keep it up. And nobody ever thought to compliment me or thank me for the music, but he always, without fail, always in the middle, acknowledge who's making the music, who's making it fun over here, and will compliment me for it. After that, you should know I named one of my sons Schneier, and slowly, like, my family started to be chodzer b'tshuva just from that one act that he used to do. Rav Avram Gernachovsky, so used to be in yeshivas, wasn't exactly the way that it is in Torah Traga, and you know, people, after they would learn in the Beis Midrash, you go back to your room, and you say Kriyat Shema, and you go to sleep. If you talk for a couple of minutes, but you go to sleep so that you have energy for the next morning. So much so that the yeshiva, it bothered them if people would stay up having fun in their rooms at night. They wanted, Bachram have to get to sleep. You need enough sleep. You need to be awake and focused the next day. So one time, Rav Avram Gernachovsky and his yeshiva was walking near the dormitory, and he heard like playing in one of the rooms. And he knocked on the door, and they opened it, and they're sitting around there playing chess. They're playing chess over there instead of going to sleep. It's getting late. They're going to be tired the next day. So Avram Gernachovsky says, you're also having trouble falling asleep. I can't sleep tonight. If I can't sleep and you can't sleep, let's just get together. We'll have a chabura. We'll learn together until we get tired. And he brought them to the Beis Midrash, and they learned till Vasikin. He took them with him to Vasikin that morning. After Vasikin, he said, don't worry, I'm going to tell the Rosh Yeshiva that you daven with me Vasikin already and that we all couldn't sleep last night. so you can come late to Seder tomorrow morning. They said that without even giving us any mussar, any rebuke, telling us that we're doing anything wrong, after that we never did that again. We never stayed up, you know, playing chess. The way that he used his chachma to deliver a point and to teach us a lesson in such a loving way that also he gave of himself and without making us feel bad at all. Another thing he once did, Rav Avraham Ganachovsky in his yeshiva, a new Rebbe came in to give shir. Rav Avraham Ganachovsky is one of the Gedolei Ador, one of the Gaonim, complete Torah giant, brilliant shiurim. Nobody's going to want to leave his shir to go to this new Rebbe's shir. But you have to fill it up. You can't leave a shir empty with everybody in one and not in the other. But if he's going to tell him, come on, do a chesed, you know, make him feel good, go to shir. What is that to the other Rebbe? Like everybody's doing him a chesed by sitting in a shir. That's also not the right way to do it. So he started right when this Rebbe came in, teaching nothing in shir, just basically reading the Gemara and saying the most simplest pshatim, nothing deep, nothing complicated. So everyone just got completely bored of a shir. There's nothing for us to gain over here. And they slowly all started to switch over to the new Rebbe's shir, even at his own expense of looking like he doesn't have what to give over. He doesn't have any kedushim. He didn't care. But to get to that other Rav in that chachma kind of a way that nobody comes out embarrassed or feeling bad, that's another area in the way that you see the godless of the tzaddikim. We see from the Torah how much that even though, yeah, there's a bunch of miracles, when Eliezer was watching Rivka, how the water jumped into her pail, and how the poison was moved from Eliezer to Besuel, and Besuel is the one that died, and Kafetz Lo Aderech, how he got there so quickly. But what the Torah decides instead, that is like hints to in the Psukim. You have to read Rashi to read about those miracles. But what the Psukim really are lengthy about when describing Rivka and what she did is the chesed that she did, and exactly how she did the chesed, and how she ran, and how she worded the offer that she was making to Eliezer. And it's so obvious and clear that the message that the Torah is trying to give to us is how much we have to work on ourselves, being sensitive, being caring, noticing the needs of other people, presenting it in the right way, and having a complete act of chesed that's planned and thought out and filled with sensitivity, that only really as we grow in Torah could we be as successful as these stories that we're saying over now. Shkar.